So as you can see, a project like that just raised so many questions that we hope we will be able to answer. And we had not touched on the aspect of the populations here before, like last year. So these, like this team and other teams are just setting the foundations for future projects. And hopefully we'll be able to answer all these questions. Something I forgot perhaps to mention that the project, like that part of the Muse project, Hochelaga, was also supervised by Elena Bennett. Elena is, we forgot to mention that, she's was supposed to be here, but she flew to the States and got stuck because of problems with her flight, not being able to return last night, unfortunately. So she's going to try to be here in the afternoon. She apologizes for that. So with that, we are going to go with the next theme, talking about Montreal. As you see, this is kind of a detective work, trying to find evidence that will tell us something about the land and our relationship also to the land. So the next group will talk about Montreal, and it's Claire and Gabrielle and Arié, Marine, Melissa and Anna.
Hello. Good morning. My name's Arié. This is Melissa and Gabrielle. And we're here to present on the development timeline, seeing how Montreal grew out of the natives into a modern economic city, as well Claire, Marine, and Anna were part of our team. So quick discussion of what we're going to talk about today. First, sort of on a macro level, how does our project fit within the vision of Hochelaga as a whole? Then go down into the micro, what exact objectives were we hoping to achieve with our research, what were we trying to get out of, which led to sort of two different sets of maps from early settlement Montreal as Montreal began to become an economic city. So we'll look at those. And then we'll sort of conclude with looking forward and thinking, how can this go into Hochelaga? How can future years of Muse projects build upon what we did this semester? So, as you know, the Hochelaga vision is based off of Manhattan. However, in that book, Sorensen really stuck with landscape ecology. He was interested in what it looked like before Westerners arrived in New York. However, to really incorporate all three pillars of sustainability, we felt that to ignore economic factors, to ignore social factors, really wasn't proper. So we felt that if we were able to see, to backtrack and see what did Montreal look like throughout its growth, how did it grow as a city, then maybe urban planners and future participants in the city could make better decisions. In that way, we'd be able to really say, okay, where is Montreal headed from, and where can Montreal go? So what were our objectives? First was to find accurate and precise maps. This is a bit of geography jargon, so I'll explain. Accuracy sort of reflects how well the map is drawn. Does it fit with the right proportions of the city? Is topography correct? While precise means how detailed is the map? Are the street names right? Do the intersections cross where they should be? We felt that to be able to properly georeference these maps, we would need both accuracy and precision, and it was definitely a balancing game as we looked through the maps. As well, we hoped to define points of interest, whether they were economic or social landmarks. We felt that these points would be able to provide a base timeline for the city if we knew that a certain landmark was in a place at a given time, but the map wasn't showing it, then we knew that map would be ineffective for our research. We felt that with these points of interest, we'd be able to really grow the vision and provide good points of reference for future readers. Say, oh, I know where that is. Oh, cool, I didn't know it was built then. Finally, we hope to create a baseline georeferenced map. With this sort of baseline, we'd be able to start building a more beautiful map that had economic factors as well, that could sort of help build the marketing, help build the book that will be Hochelaga. So what maps did we find? We found two different sets of maps from the early economic settlements. The first was by Morin, who you'll learn more about in a bit. And we were most excited about his maps because it was the same person who made the two sets of maps. We felt that this was good because any inconsistencies with his mapping techniques would be consistent throughout. And that way we could start to build a strong base. For the second set of maps, we were looking for the early 1800s because this was sort of a real time of the economic boom when Montreal went from a small trading post to a major city. While we were unable to find the same sort of two maps, same person, We did find two maps that were built only 10 years apart. So we felt that it was effective and we were comfortable with it. To be able to assess accurate precision, we had a few sort of guidelines. Is the scale to a good scale? Is it 1 inch to 1 mile or is it 1 inch to 300 miles? If the scale was too broad, then we wouldn't have the sort of detail and precision that we were hoping for. What are the boundaries of the map? Obviously, Montreal is limited by the river in the south, but to the east and west and north, does it show all the way to the extent to the outer limits of the city, or does it artificially cut it off? We're interested in tracking, if we're interested in tracking sprawl, but the map doesn't show all the way to the east or west, then it's not really a useful map. As well, landmarks. As I mentioned, these points of interest could be good reference points, and if they didn't have a landmark, then we were unable to use the map.
So the first set of maps that we decided to analyze were from a French surveyor, topographer, and architect called Pierre-Louis Morin. And he actually came to Canada around 1837 in pursuit of a missionary life, and he ended up under the refuge of Sulpician priests. And because of his studies in arts and architecture, they trusted him to design the schools and different buildings. And so he was also entrusted by the provincial government with the responsibility of holding records and maps depicting the value, extent, and ownership of land as a basis of taxation. And so it was during this time that, in collaboration with Honoré Beaugrand, Morin published an atlas called Vieux Montréal, 1611 to 1803. And it was from this collection that we found our two maps, which were dated from 1687 to 1723, and then from 1724 to 1760. Now, seeing as these maps were actually drawn in 1884, Morin had to base himself off of older maps to compile a more comprehensive one, and they depicted the city over large periods of time as opposed to one fixed point in time. Now, although this may have had consequences for accuracy, we decided to analyze them anyways because Morin was a trained topographer and architect, and he was funded by the government, which meant that details about street names and building locations were pretty meticulous, and also he had enough funding to draw the best map possible. So the oldest of the maps that we decided to analyze was dated from 1687 to 1723, and it was actually one of the oldest and most accurate maps that we found, and the detail is pretty incredible for our purposes. As you can see, there are different colors, and they help us to distinguish between residential buildings, commercial buildings, green spaces, and religious institutions, and he also labeled many of the streets, and two of which, Notre-Dame and Saint-Paul, are still major streets that you can walk down today. And from this, and the index that Morin provides, we can also begin to make out some of the earliest buildings present in Montreal's history, including the Sulpician Seminary and the original Hôtel Dieu. Another aspect of this map that was very useful was the contextual information that Morin provides, and he provides them in French and in English, which makes it good for present-day Montreal as well. And he talks about things like how Monsieur Callière and Monsieur Duluth were held responsible to fortify the city, and these are names that you would recognize when you're walking down old Montreal or the plateau today. The proposed fortifications can be seen on this map if you're looking at the red contours. The second map was dated 1724 to 1760, and as you can see, it's very much the same format as the other map. By then, the fortification was already built, and you can see that it's a black contour now as opposed to a red contour. And Morin's notes tell us that at this point in time, Montreal's area was about 93 acres, and the population was about 8,300 people. Although this map has fewer street names, it isn't hard to tell with the naked eye that there wasn't much difference between the older map and this map itself. And as we went further into our historical research, we did see that although Montreal was growing, it was doing so at a pretty slow pace between the 17th and 18th centuries. So in order to better analyze the difference between Morin's maps and Montreal as we know it today, we decided to geo-reference the newest of the two maps onto a map of modern-day Montreal streets. So we only did the 1724 to 1760 map because, as previously mentioned, there was few differences to be discerned from the two older maps that we looked at. So the colored boxes that you see on this map are polygons, which represent major points of interest on Morin's maps, and the purple lines are outlines of what Montreal streets look like today. From this image, there are many remarkable observations to be made. For example, the Sulpician Seminary still stands in Morin's maps where it is today, and it is, in fact, the oldest standing structure in Montreal from that time. You can tell from the streets on Morin's maps that the Sulpician Seminary was between Saint-François-Xavier and Saint-Joseph, and on today's street map, it's between Saint-François-Xavier and Saint-Sulpice Street, so you can see a lot of the historical influence there. One of the structures that's no longer on today's map is Hôtel Dieu, which was Montreal's first hospital, and it was actually moved in 1861 to the location that you know today, which is in the plateau. The fortifications were also demolished in 1804, and what's interesting about this map is you can see that where it used to stand today, it's a street called Fortification Lane. Considering that the area on Morin's map represents a very small area of the Montreal Island as we know it today, this georeference map makes it very clear that Montreal has undergone very extensive developmental changes since 1760.
So for the second set of maps that we assessed, one was from 1815 and the second one was from 1825. So the one from 1815 was made by Joseph Bouchette, who was born in Quebec City in 1774, and he was the son of a topographer. After being trained as both an artist and an architect, Bouchette succeeded his uncle to become the second Surveyor General of British North America in 1803. Bouchette was then commissioned to survey the territory of Lower Canada during his service in the War of 1812. This account encompassed the complete knowledge of the area at that time, and it was published in a book in 1815 wherein our map was found, which you will see later. As for the map from 1825, it was created by a British Army officer and trained surveyor named John Adams, of whom actually very little is known, and it was very hard to find information about him since there are many John Adamses in the world. But Adams' goals in creating the map were to ascertain how much land was owned by the British Crown, as well as assessing the impact that the construction of the Lachine Canal would have on the landscape of the city. So this was our first map from 1815. As it was made specifically for marine military purposes, you can see there's a strong emphasis on shorelines and the river in general. The fact that Bouchette was trained as both an artist and a surveyor lend great credibility to his map-making skills. And the map is very detailed with pretty much all of the streets, even the little streets are named. And in the north, you can see the farmland plots. Many of them are named as to who owned the plots. One of the aspects of the map that we found most useful was that Bouchette actually detailed future projects that hadn't been constructed yet, such as bridges, canals, squares, and streets that hadn't yet been constructed. So this is what his map looks like after we georeferenced it. A few important landmarks or points of interest that we wanted to outline would be Champ de Mars, which is the green area. This area was leveled in the early 19th century to make it suitable as a military parade ground. And now it's a public park, and it's located actually on the site of where the old city walls used to be. And today you can see replicas of those walls. As well, seen in yellow, it's kind of hard to see, it's right here. It's in Jacques Cartier Square, it's Nelson's Monument, which was built in 1809 to honor Admiral Horatio Nelson, who died in the Battle of Trafalgar. This is the oldest standing monument in Montreal, as well as the oldest standing monument to Nelson in the world. As for the second map, this is our map from 1825, made by John Adams. As you can see, even at first glance, there's a ton of development between these two time periods. Spatially, you can see that development has extended to the north, the west, and the east. And many, many suburbs, what they call suburbs, which would now just be part of the city, were created during that time. The map is extremely detailed, naming all streets and landmarks are clearly named. And Adams even went so far as to label the uses for the different buildings that are pictured, such as public buildings, warehouses, stables, barns, sheds, even outhouses. Since he was in charge of drawing the layout for the Lachine Canal, Adams paid close attention to the location of rivers and ponds, which made the map extremely useful for our project and potentially for future Muse projects as well. And this is what his map looks like after we georeferenced it. You can see the pink square there, that's Place d'Armes, which was originally named Place de la Fabrique in 1693 and was given its current name in 1721 by Sulpician priests, and it's a square in the city. As well, all the way to the east, in red, you can see the John Molson Brewery, which was built in 1786 and remains the oldest standing brewery in North America, as well as the second oldest company in Canada after the Hudson's Bay Company. So here you can see we overlaid the two maps over top of each other. It's kind of hard to see in this light, but the lighter image is the 1815 and the darker image is 1825. And you can see many major changes happened in this time period. In addition to the Lachine Canal, many other canals were built for Montreal's smaller rivers, which now all run underground, along what would now be Rue Saint-Antoine, which is here. You can see St. Martin's River, which used to flow freely across the center of town. And there are several bridges that went across it in the 1815 map, whereas on the 1825 map, it runs in a straight line because it was diverted into a canal. As well, you can see a fairly large pond on the 1815 map right here, which just completely disappears in the 1825 map. And because it wasn't named in any of the research that we did, we don't know what happened to it, except that we know it disappeared sometime in that time period. The last thing that's really evident from this map is the densification of the city core between these two periods. On Adams's map, you can see there's a lot more buildings packed into the small space than there were just 10 years prior.
So looking forward, how can we use this information to build stronger Hochelaga vision? The first is to continue what we've been working on in building a time step frame throughout the growth of Montreal's history. It would be great if every 10 years or even every 5 years we had a map detailing exactly how the city grew and where it grew. As well, we could do quantification information about the built landscape. If we were able to digitize these maps, then we could figure out exactly how much of the city was used for rural use, how much of the city was public buildings. And this way, we could start to be able to track how the city's built landscape changed over time. As well, for urban planning, especially on the 1815 map, there was lots of weirdly created land parcels that don't fit into the exact sort of grid that we expect with an urban planning. As well, many of the parcels are labeled with people's names that we're not sure who they are. Further research into who these people are and how the city was built through urban planning could reveal great insights into how the city is today and how we could make future steps more sustainable. Finally, by tracking urban sprawl of the past, we could learn about urban sprawl for the future. By seeing exactly where the city grew and how it grew, we could begin to have smarter growth in Montreal that would encourage higher densification and thus less carbon miles. We'll now invite the rest of our group, and we will stand for questions. Thank you.
Just to let you know that it's hard to see you because of the light we have here. Yes.
I have a question about, you mentioned accuracy of the Mouchette map, and you mentioned him being like an artist and a topographer. It might be a silly question, but did you maybe consider that as an artist he might have wanted things to look more aesthetically pleasing, so he might have kind of forsaken accuracy for that?
I think that's a valid concern, except for the fact that he was a surveyor general. And he was named Surveyor General in 1803, and he was commissioned to make the map by the government during the war. So I think that, if anything, his artistic ability just lent to his, enhanced his map-making skills. But that is a valid concern.
In terms of work for future groups, were those four maps like standout maps for you guys? Were they the only four maps that could be worked with, or did you find tons of maps
We actually went to the rare book section in the McGill Library, and we found a map from 1801 that actually showed more urban sprawl. So that actually looked really interesting in that map, but at that point we had already picked our four maps and had georeferenced all of them. And we really liked the 1815 and 1825 maps because it was only 10 years apart, and you could see such a change in 10 years that we thought it would be best to georeference those ones, but we definitely think that future groups should look at 1815 map.
Also, we based ourselves off of the spatial database from last group, who kind of gave us some direction to head towards to, and really the years that we chose were because the maps found before were completely, we couldn't georeference them at all. And on one of the first slides, we had an old Pierre-Louis Morin who made another map, but it's just basically a forest and it was impossible to georeference, so it wasn't really what we were looking for.
George?
Did you get a feel that there was any planning going on? That, you know, was someone actually organizing this, or were they just kind of building between the walls?
Well, it's hard to really find who was planning, but we know the Sulpicians had a really strong impact on the street grid. But it, we can't say it was one person, just because often it was a group of people. And also, when the city grew, it was just a progress, so it wasn't necessarily one person who planned the city and said, this is going to be this. And with all the urban changes, like, it wasn't necessarily organized.
There's actually one man, though, who was a Sulpician priest also. His name was, his last name was Dolier de Casson, or Canon. And And he actually did plan the streets out so much that some of his other streets on his plan were never built. So there was some planning involved. And at first, we also thought that the streets were just, you know, named after saints. The Montreal was supposed to be the city of saints. But it was just sort of, you know, a bunch of guys naming streets for their friends. So St. Paul was actually for Paul de Maisonneuve, not necessarily the saint. So there was definitely some planning involved and, you know, some nods given to some of the original founders of Montreal.
There should be at least one street named Dolier de Casson in Montreal. I'm not sure it exists, actually.
Well, we included on our roadmap for future students that really the first people to look for would be the people at the archives who and at the rare book section at McGill, who were really there to help us and guide us through. Especially what we think would be most helpful is you often have patches of lands, and so different houses, and it would be interesting to look at old records to see to whom exactly they belong to, based on taxation also. So yeah, that's what we're really looking for.
We also wanted to do more years, because since we did stop in 1825, Montreal has changed a lot since 1825, so even if we focused on the 20th century, it would be more helpful. So if future groups did more work in the 20th century, then, you know, in a couple years, say 5 years, then we could go more to, like you were saying, like real estate and urban planners and figure out what we can do.
And just perhaps to add something to that, we're very much in the stage where we're sort of setting the foundations for this project. But obviously, yes, we want to talk to all these people and want these people to be aware of that. I mean, talking about planners and all the people you named, that's going to come. And we're, well, just this is sort of the beginning, starting to become public about what we're doing. Yes, there's... Okay, very good. You're talking about fire?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
So we started looking into the fires because there were many fires, especially like two very extreme ones. And every time after the fires, well, they decided that they were not going to make any more wood buildings. And if I'm correct, I think that was in 1825. And so they made laws, no more wood. They remade everything out of stone. And that's why those buildings are still standing today. And that was also with the street widening. Like they decided to make these laws because there had been so many fires. Like the city was burnt down many times.
Just we didn't, first when we really started looking at the project, we kind of just went for broad urban changes that happened in Montreal, and we fell on the fires and the street widening, but all of that was happening in the 19th century. And after speaking to the professors and in the group, we thought maybe it was a bit too easy to start there and not start further back. And so that's why we didn't necessarily concentrate, but we actually left an Excel sheet for future students, really talking about each point of interest, and a lot of them were rebuilt after the fire, after fires, for example, Chapelle Bon Secours and everything. So just for them to know that changes in size and everything were because most often of fires.
Yes.
No, we didn't really concentrate on land use, really, especially outside the city of Montreal. You can see on the older maps outside the fortifications, you have certain houses and then you have green patches of lands, which we assume are agricultural lands, but we didn't really have the time to go into it more closely, and we didn't want to overlap with other groups' work as well.
Okay, thank you very much.